Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Later on the program, music contributor Bob Weinberg speaks with blues man Albert Castilla about his new CD, Solid Ground. Candace Russell describes Haitian art and her new book, Masterpieces of Haitian Art. Chef Norman Van Aken serves up a word on food, and our Broward Arts Calendar features Jody Horn-Leschinski. A world premiere will soon open on stage Saturday, May 3rd at MTC's Intimate Art Deco Theater. Here's Judith Bishop to tell us more.
Vibrant theater is organic. It's always growing and always changing. The Miami Theater Center underwent a major change several years ago when it transitioned from the child-oriented playground theater to one that serves both adults and children. The hybrid troupe is now in its 10th season, and more than its name has changed. They now have a main stage and a smaller theater that seats 50. The center also offers promising playwrights a 5-week residency to develop, rehearse, and perform new work. Every cultural institution has a visionary who takes the project from dream to reality. The prime mover behind the Miami Theater Center is Stephanie Anson, its founder and artistic director. She's a Miami native who earned degrees at Brown and Columbia Universities, then worked for 16 years in New York and Boston, where she studied, acted, and directed. When she returned to Miami, Stephanie worked at Summer Shorts before founding her own theater company. Stephanie Anson is our guest today on South Florida Arts Beat. Stephanie Anson, welcome to South Florida Arts Beat. You know, it strikes me that you are one of the lucky people. You have a passion for theater, and you were able to turn that into a full-time career that not only indulges your passion, but also benefits our community. When did you fall in love with theater?
I fell in love with it when I was cast as a tree in Winnie the Pooh. In summer camp.
What kind of tree?
Well, it was a tree without any lines, and I was very bitter. And so I decided that I would make it my project to get bigger parts in the future.
It's funny. I think Barbara Walters once asked someone what kind of a tree they would be as a way of psychoanalyzing them during an interview. So that was the beginning, huh? And you were hooked.
I was hooked, and I was more focused on playing the piano at that point. I was a musician. And then the next phase of getting hooked was I went to a summer camp in Massachusetts. It's a performing arts camp. And I was cast as the alcoholic father in Big River.
Well, that wasn't typecast.
Not at all. It was not at all. And all the adults were in shock. And they said, wow, you need to keep doing this. And I did. I kept acting. And then in college, I realized I really wanted to direct, that I was always having an outside view from the inside, and it wasn't necessarily helpful for my happiness. So I kept learning about performing and acting and directing a little bit, but it was after college that I started experimenting with directing, and then a few years later applied to grad school for directing.
Well, acting, writing, directing, that's a great foundation to be an artistic director of a theater company. Where are you most comfortable? Is there one aspect of theater that you really enjoy the most?
Well, I was thinking about that this morning. If I had to give up everything except one, I would hold on to directing.
Because of the control of the vision?
I hope it's not control. I hope it's expression of a vision and the physicality of the vision and the collaboration with everybody involved. I like the experience of bringing the best I can out of the composer, the designer, the actors, the technicians, everybody involved. Find the way to make people feel engaged and do great work and surprise me. Give someone an idea and they give a result that's even better than I imagined. That's incredibly fulfilling.
There are different kinds of directors. There's the nurturing, almost maternalistic director. There is the general Patton director, my way or the highway. How would you characterize your approach to it?
Lately, I've been doing backdoor directing, where I'm creating an atmosphere and a language and a safe environment and having people find the dynamics and the relationships without realizing what's happening. And then when I have to be a little more Patton-esque, like go here, go there, there's an underlying texture and web that's holding the ensemble together. So they trust the process. So there has to be a patent element in there for me. There has to be that final say. But it helps to have trust and understanding and a feeling that we're all in it together underneath it.
You're a triple threat, acting, writing, directing. You weave from one to the other. How do you find this transition enhances your ability to run a theater company?
I've put acting aside because I like rehearsing, but I don't like performing. So I really love the process of creating. And as a writer, the play, I know, doesn't exist until it's on stage with the actors and then with the audience. So I understand that as a writer because I'm a director. So if I write something with my collaborator, Fernando Calcedilla, and I'm writing it, and then I go in and I'm directing it, I'm not precious about it. I'm not holding on to it. I'll cut lines. I'll restructure. I'm watching the piece evolve. I feel like we have to be really quiet and let the play emerge, and I'm not afraid to slash things that are getting in the way.
You mentioned Fernando, your writing collaborator. You co-write most of your scripts. How do you do that? Do you take one scene, he takes another, or do you write it line by line together in the same room at the same time?
It's different for every play, for sure. But the main stages are we come upon an idea together, either through researching stories or we'll say we want to make a play for this particular actress and then we try to find an idea. So we start the research together. Then at some point we start outlining the story. And we always have to do more research along the way to fill in the gaps of the story. He's amazing at that. Like I'll say, I need to find a Sumerian goddess of merriment, laughter, something like that. And then he'll find it. That actually exists. She's the Sumerian goddess of merriment and beer. She existed. Or I'll need to find some specific plot point in history that we can bounce off of, and he'll find it. So we're researching together. We make the structure together. And then I start writing dialogue. But when we wrote Three Sisters, we did go line by line with six translations of Chekhov's Three Sisters. We had four English translations. We had a literal translation from Russian to English. And then we had the Google translation. And we went through all six line by line, trying to understand the essence of the lines. We translated the whole thing. And then I went through and started editing and shaping and making a cohesive voice. With this play that's opening next week and everybody drinks the same water, there was a lot of line-by-line work because we were trying to find a balance between working from history, from some real historical characters and a real historical event, and creating a compelling story. But there were scientific things we had to research, historical things we had to research, and it's a murder mystery, which is a new genre for us, so that logic took a lot of step-by-step line by line working, and then I'll go back and massage it and love it and make it easier to say.
Well, you mentioned research, and as you say, there was quite a bit in this latest venture. It's a murder mystery set in 13th century Spain in Cordoba. Well, you co-wrote it, and you are directing it, so you tell us the plot elements without giving away who actually done it.
Okay. So the story begins in 1236 in the month of June in Cordoba, Spain, and the Christian king has just taken over the city of Cordoba after 500 years of Islamic rule. So it's the day that the Christian king enters the city. His mother, Queen Berenguela, is a very powerful woman. We're amazed that there hasn't been a Maggie Smith movie made about her. She comes into the castle, her son lays down to take a nap. Someone brings him a glass of water, and he becomes violently ill. So, of course, she assumes it's a revenge act from the Muslims. And she starts looking into this and interrogating the leader of the Muslim community. That's a knee-jerk reaction. Does that sound familiar? Blame the Muslims?
It sounds very contemporary,
yes,
actually.
Yes, exactly. But then slowly they learn that it's not just the king who's been poisoned, it's the whole Christian neighborhood. It's not just the Christian neighborhood that's been poisoned, it's the whole Jewish neighborhood. And it's not just the Christian and Jewish neighborhood, it's the whole Muslim neighborhood as well. It's the entire city. The water in the entire city has been poisoned. So those three religious groups have been living together pretty harmoniously until this moment. And now they start pointing fingers at each other. And it becomes violent. And what happens is the Christian prince, who's a teenager, a Jewish girl who's a teenager studying to be a midwife, and a Muslim teenage girl who is a copyist at the court. She works for her father, who's the head judge. The three of them decide, look, our parents, our elders are just finger-pointing and name-calling, and it's getting violent, and they're just motivated by fear. We need to get beyond this. We need to find a solution. And I'm not going to tell you how, but they're the ones who find out the cause, and they find the solution.
Sounds like a relevant play. Not only is the water poisoned, but the atmosphere as well.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for joining us. It was great having you on South Florida Arts Beat.
Thank you.
In conjunction with their new production, Everybody Drinks the Same Water, there will be two free events. One, a medieval street fair on Sunday, May 4th from 12 to 6 o'clock. That'll be outside the theater, which is located at 9806 Northeast 2nd Avenue in Miami Shores. Later in the week, on May 7th, they're holding an academic panel on modern-day Spain at 8 o'clock at Books and Books in Coral Gables. For more information, log on to info@mtcmiami.org or telephone 305-751-9550. For South Florida Arts Beat, this is Judith Bishop.
Judith Bishop is a television journalist who has covered breaking news, politics, and the arts for WABC and CNBC. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat will return in just a moment.